Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's Irish Farmers Journal Podcast. I'm Katrina Morrissey and I'm joined in studio today by our policy analyst Anne Finnegan, Deputy News Editor Amy Ford and Beef Editor Adam Woods. This week is usually one of the highlights of the year for farmers as they flock to the National Ploughing Championships, but unfortunately this year the event was quite restricted due to coronavirus rules. Later on in the podcast we'll hear from some of the ploughmen and ploughwomen who were talented enough to book their place at Rathaniska. But first, Adam, I'd like to talk to you and the front page story of this week's journal, which features what I would say is a very, very unusual apology from the Department of Agriculture. Can you fill our listeners in on that and the background?
Yes, Katrina, this is going back to the BEAM scheme introduced, I suppose, to compensate farmers for the losses that they would have made on finishing animals in 2018 and 2019 as a result of Brexit and the poor beef price during those 2 years. It paid out farmers €100 on a finished animal and €40 on a suckler cow, but there was a condition attached to the scheme that they had to reduce their nitrogen output on their farm, their bovine nitrogen from cattle, by 5% from the 1st of July 2019. From the 1st of July 2020 to the 30th of June 2021. There was a period put in then to defer that. There was a lot of farmer anger about that 5% reduction, and the minister came along and issued a second deferred period to reduce that nitrogen. I guess they would say there was 3,600 farmers in a nutshell that didn't meet that deadline. They had fines imposed on them. They got a letter out last Monday to say that that fine would have to be paid within 30 days or a 3% interest rate would be applied. But what the letter didn't say was that the department would move to this week take those fines out of the ANC payment that farmers were due that hit bank accounts on Thursday. So we have some farmers out there, some of those 3,600 farmers who didn't receive an ANC payment this week, and that wasn't communicated to them that that payment would be taken out of the ANC payment. And that's what the minister has apologised about. There's been widespread anger from farm organisations about the way this was done, the sharp practice, and I guess the zero communication with farmers is the big issue, Katrina, in terms of not telling them that the ANC payment. Beef farming is a very, very tight margin, we'll say, business. Farmers would have had that ANC payment budgeted to pay for some bill this week. It comes mid-September every year, and this year for some of those farmers it hasn't come, and I guess that's what the anger is about.
And like, it'd be fair to say some of them might have repayments, bank repayments or something scheduled to tie in, Adam, wouldn't they, in some cases?
Absolutely. There's fertiliser bills to pay, Katrina. There's contractor bills to pay. And that's a substantial payment on a lot of farms. You know, it's upwards. It can be up as high as, you know, €3,500 on some farms, an 85% advance. And definitely, I spoke to one farmer this week who had a cheque wrote, and I know that shouldn't happen, but it does happen on farms where you write a cheque to a guy and you tell him, look, don't let it in until next week, until the ANC payment gets banked at the end of this week. Well, he was in a position of ringing that farmer or ringing that person, that supplier, and saying, look, that ANC payment didn't come. Don't lodge that cheque. check until I get some cattle sold here. So a really, really awkward position, a little bit embarrassing for the government in terms of not communicating. When they did send that letter out last week, it was a very simple line at the bottom that this will be taken back from your ANC payment. But I guess politically, that wasn't very palatable to do that.
But that line wasn't in the letters, Adam. That's your point, isn't it? They had no indication. There was an understanding, I suppose, that would come out of basic payment, but that is into October. They were certainly not expecting it to come out of the disadvantaged money this week.
Yeah, and what has come to light even today, Katrina, and yesterday, we've had calls from some farmers who actually ticked a box to go to that deferred period, and they have still had the money taken out of their ANC payments. So again, we'll have to see about that, and look, we'll be covering that in the next few days as regards what has happened there. There's also a bit of confusion around that appeals mechanism. Farmers had, we'll say, I think 27 days to appeal that decision on applying the fine, but these fines have been taken out within 6 or 7 days of being notified of that fine. So I'm not too sure where that appeals process stands now.
Yeah, it sounds like a right fine mess from the department, for the department to deal with now. Adam, that wasn't the only issue rising and annoying beef farmers this week. I gather that the outgoing Chagas director, Jerry Boyle, has made some comments that went down like the proverbial lead balloon.
Yeah, Katrina, Jerry Boyle, the director of Chagas, I think he has 2 weeks left, and he's not going to go quietly, obviously. The Irish Times reported this week online that at a Dublin economics workshop this week, he will say, just told the group at that workshop that Chagas was strongly advocating switching from beef cow production to dairy beef production as part of the state's response to the climate crisis. This has completely, we'll say, maddened and angered a huge amount of suckler farmers out there. There was a thought, I guess, would it be right or wrong, over the last maybe 5 years, that Chagas were moving more towards dairy beef production, that the whole remit in terms of increasing dairy cow numbers, that they've seen beef farmers as playing an integral role in avoiding welfare problems on dairy farms, that they would switch to dairy beef production. I guess there's another thought that people would have thought that suckler cow numbers would drop as dairy cow numbers go up. Suckler cow numbers haven't dropped. We're dropping about 1.5%. A year. So there's a problem there, and I guess Jerry Boyle sees the solution in that all suckler beef farmers should switch to dairy beef production. And look, I have huge issues with this. I know a lot of people have huge issues with it. The IFA have come out with a very, you know, shocked response, and looking for Chagas to confirm that statement. Was it coming from Chagas or was it coming from Jerry Boyle? I guess Chagas based the research, Katrina, on dairy beef production, on growing maybe 12 tonne of grass in Chagas and Grange in County Meath. And you can run a very high stocking rate when you grow 12 tonne of grass, and probably dairy beef systems can be profitable when you grow that amount of grass. But inherently, a lot of our suckler farms are in the west of Ireland. And
they're not on that type of land.
Absolutely not. And they're able to grow. The farm isn't capable of growing 12 tonne of grass. They're growing 5 or 6 tonne. So when you put dairy calves onto that system, it won't be profitable. And that's the huge issue, I guess, that I have, that everybody has. And look, this story is going to go on. It's not going to go down lightly. Chagas are going to have to come out and confirm, you know, is this the way they're going? And back up the figures and back up that statement with economic figures for behind it.
Yeah, and I suppose the driving force is we understand the driving force that where Jerry Boyle was coming from was the climate targets, isn't it? It's very much not in a profitability for the farmer context that he made those comments. It was in the context of reaching national climate targets.
That's it, Katrina. But there's a wider question here too, I guess, if we go back, and I know maybe 2 years is a long time to go back, but if we go back to our beef summit in Ballinasloe in 2019, in May 2019, Professor Wallace's work, the UCD economist, would have looked at Galway as providing, you know, 700 million in terms of income to that county, 12,400 jobs. And it's very, very simple to apply maybe a measure on economics. Dairy beef is better than suckler beef. But what about the wider economy? And what about the whole west of Ireland in terms of where suckler cows are? And Jerry Boyle himself would have said back in the past that to reduce the suckler herd would be economic heresy. And I quote on that. Now, look, everybody can change their mind. And I guess things have changed in the last few years as regards climate. But this isn't going down well with suckler farmers. And they're looking for answers from Chagas as to what the future direction. I guess Frank O'Mara is the incoming director. And maybe he has answers as well, questions to answer as well, as regards what direction Chagas take as regards suckler beef in the future.
Thanks very much, Adam. And going back to your earlier story about the ANC money, I was actually contacted by a farmer yesterday from Athlone. He was left with only €50 of his ANC payment after the beam deductions were made. This particular man was in his 80s, and he told me that he had the ANC money penciled in to pay his VHI. So a very real example of a man left with practically nothing out of what he was expecting. And you have a front page story that would relate to issues affecting farmers of his age in their 80s and their pension in particular. Can you tell us a bit more about that, please?
Yeah, thanks, Katrina. So this is a study by the National University of Maynooth and Chagas examining state pension provision for the farming community. And the team of researchers found that many farmers arrive at retirement age and they fail to qualify for the contributory pension, the state contributory pension or non-contributory pension. And like that farmer that in your example, remain dependent on their farm income into their retirement years. So what the study found was that farmers who had insufficient PRSI contributions to qualify for the contributory pension were unlikely to qualify then for the non-contributory pension unless they divested of the majority of their land.
So because the asset value, is it? And that they're deemed to have this amount of wealth, so they shouldn't be getting the non-contributory pension.
Yeah, it comes down to the means testing for the non-contributory pension and the asset value of land. So I'll come to that. But if I go back to the non-contributory pension first, there are issues around farmers and PRSI contributions. So for a self-employed person to make PRSI contributions, they have to be the owner of the business, or they have to have the control over the business. So that affects when farmers can start making PRSI contributions. So if a farmer doesn't succeed to the business early enough, they can't make 40 years of contributions unless they're a full business partner, which the majority of farmers who are already retired or coming near retirement age wouldn't have 40 years. They wouldn't have got the farm early enough, and farm partnerships wouldn't have been widespread enough to have given them the opportunity. And the second challenge, I suppose, for low-income farmers and PRSI is that in years where farmers make net losses on the farm, they're not required to make PRSI contributions. Now, that creates a gap in their contribution history, which I don't think everybody is aware of. And you could argue that farmers can make voluntary contributions, but I suppose, again, you're relying on people knowing that they should do that and that they can do that, and also that they have the means to do it, because we are talking about low-income farms after all. So when you're locked out of the contributory pension pot, that brings you to looking at the non-contributory pension pot, and that brings you into the realm of means testing for self-employed people. And there's two, there's two pieces that are looked at in means testing: cash income and investment income, which takes in the whole range of investments, your savings, property investments, and farmland would come in under that. And it was quite stark reading this research. They based their research on an average case study farm. So they're taking an 80-acre farm. They put an average land value at it. So they valued the farm at €675,000. And the imputed annual income against that land value was €133,640. So many multiples of what the average income for that farm would be, or I would argue what the potential for that holding would be. And I suppose the context is, when you look at the National Farm Survey, I averaged family farm income for the past 3 years, and that was just north of 24,000. So, I mean, it really highlights how unfair the means testing is with regard to farmers or self-employed people in general who are asset rich but cash poor.
Yeah, it's almost like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, Anne, isn't it? You know, they don't have enough PRSI contributions to get the contributory pension, but they won't get the non-contributory if they haven't given away the farm, which they're relying on to keep their income going. It's a very, very difficult place to be.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, in this affects many farmers. Many farmers approaching retirement age, and many farmers who are already in receipt of some level of state pension. And you know, for the vast majority of low-income farmers, you're talking about a reduced pension that they are in receipt of. I mean, from our perspective, I think this is really important for two reasons. First of all, it's very hard to understand how somebody can farm their entire life and making a low income at that for their entire life and come to retirement age and not have the peace of mind that they can retire with some level of means to see them into their retirement. And like your farmer in your example, you know, who's waiting on a check in the post so they can pay health insurance. You know, in this day and age in Ireland, I think that's quite stark. And the second point is we hear an awful lot about generational renewal as a key policy pillar in European policy and Irish agricultural policy. And I suppose the challenge is we do focus an awful lot on supporting new entrants into the industry, which is right. But that has to be a dual emphasis to support older farmers to transition out of farming. And I think that's where we're really falling down here. And I think it is something that this study throws up the real need to address this, you know, in some form or another. There's a huge dialogue going on at the moment over pensions with the resumption of the Dáil this week. The government are waiting on the report of the Pension Commission. It's not going to address any of these issues. But it does, you know, in that space where the dialogue is happening, I think there is a space for farmers to have a conversation about the impact that this is having on them and farmers' welfare, really.
And when you mention welfare, Anne, I mean, it's been there in the statistics year after year. Older farmers still working, whether it's out of choice or necessity, are they feature very highly in farm accident and farm fatality statistics. So is this a factor in this? It seems like it definitely could be.
Yeah, it is, Katrina. I mean, my background in research was in farm health and safety, and that's going back over 20 years ago. There was a huge body of literature at that time and evidence from our own statistics in Ireland that shows that a higher proportion of older farmers and younger people on farms experience injuries on farms for a whole variety of reasons. I mean, when you get to an older age, you're less agile, your reaction times are slower. So there's a whole variety of reasons, but absolutely. And, you know, people will argue and people will listen to this and say, but surely there are older farmers who farm because they want to farm into their retirement. And that's fair. And there are older farmers. There are people who continue to farm into their retirement because they want to. But on the other hand, there are people who would happily move on and just don't see a way that they can do that with any kind of financial security to see them into their old age. And I mean, a real challenge, I do think, for people, you know, is, you know, farmers do need that security of most farmers when they reach retirement don't have a big nest egg in savings, certainly low income farmers. And there is that security and peace of mind of having a nest egg there that will see them through should anything happen and should they need it. But I think the policy really doesn't take any account of the fact that, you know, we're talking about an asset that's different to other classes of assets. You know, we're talking about something that transfers intergenerationally. Yes, farmers own their land, but most farmers I know, you know, wouldn't see it as their land to sell unless it's land that they'd bought themselves. They see themselves as custodians of an asset that's going to pass down through the generations. But policy just, you know, doesn't take that into account.
Thanks, Anne. Amy, if I can come to you, you have a cautionary tale for farmers of any age, young or old, who think they might have got a great deal on buying a tractor abroad. This has both financial and bigger implications. It was on page 3 this week. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm yet to come across anyone that doesn't love a bargain for something when they're buying something. But this week, as we were reporting in the Journal this week, a Romanian gang managed to launder €6 million in stolen money through Irish banks by scamming people into thinking that they were buying cars, tractors, other machinery and anything that they thought they could sell, really. So we spoke to Detective Superintendent Michael Cryan, who's part of this operation called Operation Omina, and he told us that this gang has stolen €22 million from people across Europe for these types of scams. And he told us that they'd offer a tractor or a piece of machinery on a website and use a number of different platforms at the same time. So they'd use a number of different websites to try and sell this tractor, which didn't actually exist. And they'd have a bank account set up with that platform, and then they'd put an item up for sale. They could take a picture of a car on a road, he said, and put that up for sale. Then farmers would transfer money to an account and never get the tractor. Then by the time the farmer, I suppose, made contact with the platform that they apparently bought this off, the money was gone, and there was no way of them getting it back. Now, he said that the only connection with Ireland was that Irish bank accounts were used to launder the money, but said he couldn't see how Irish farmers were affected. And I suppose down through the years, we have reported on that. You know, there's nearly one or two of these kind of tractor scams a year. We hear from farmers. We previously in 2019, we spoke to one Sligo farmer who was conned out of €30,000 for a tractor he thought he was getting. So it is a real cautionary tale.
Yeah, and certainly some of the cases that we have reported, Amy, we've seen full websites cloned from legitimate tractor dealers in the UK, haven't we? It's the moral of the story would be, I think the sergeant said it to you today,
if it sounds too good to be true, yeah, it probably is. And there can be really sophisticated websites that are out there. Like he gave the example as well that if the bank account is in a different country, it's a red flag. So if you think you're buying a tractor in the Czech Republic and the bank is actually in Spain, you know, that's a massive red flag. Buyer beware, basically. And again, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Thanks, Amy. And thanks to all the panel in studio. Next up, we're going to hear from some of the people who were lucky enough to get to the ploughing this week. They spoke to Siobhan Walsh and Stephen Robb from the tillage team.
Stephen Robb here with the Irish Farmers Journal. We're in Rathniska, County Leash, for day two of the National Ploughing Championships. I'm joined here by my colleague Siobhan Walsh. Siobhan, just give us a flavour of the atmosphere around the site today.
Yeah, so Stephen, no stands or anything, but I think the same excitement as you would always have around the ploughing. And if anything, it's even better to see those really skilled people ploughing out and getting the recognition they deserve. There's a bit of a crowd around, a small crowd, just a limited number of people left in. But yeah, really good atmosphere around the site and great weather. It's dry overhead.
Okay, so yeah, as you say, super weather. Jeez, the ground is in fantastic shape. So ploughing today, Siobhan, we have senior conventional, senior reversible, farmerette, macro vintage and senior horse plough. Just give us a flavour of the competition in these classes and maybe who the main kind of key competitors are.
Yeah, so day one of senior today. So senior two furrow conventional and senior two furrow reversible. Just a few interesting things in it. So the people we always hear about are ploughing. So Eamon Tracy and John Whelan are ploughing. But yesterday, Eamon's son qualified and he's actually ploughing in the same match as his dad, and John Whelan's son actually qualified as well, so he's in the reversible class with his father. The Irelands are ploughing, so Gary and Brian are also ploughing, so it's very much a family affair here today. There's a lot of different families ploughing. Out in the field where we were this morning, there's Farmerette and Mockra, and there's big competition out in those fields as well, and we've horse and conventional. Yeah, dry as you said, ground's quite hard. I see a lot of people with a lot of weights on their tractors, but certainly really good ground for ploughing, and yeah, should make for interesting.
No grass ploughing this year?
No grass ploughing, so usually today the seniors would always plough on stubbles. But they'd move to grass on day two, so tomorrow there's no grass for the test match tomorrow. So yeah, all stubbles this year.
And lastly today, Tommy Moyles was in Kerry on Thursday night for the first stop on Minister Charlie McConlogue's tour of the country, where he's been talking about his plan for the next CAP. Hear what some of the farmers in Castle Island had to say.
My name is Michael Kennedy, and just here at the meeting tonight, I just heard about it. And it was nice to meet the minister, in fairness to him, you know, meeting us, you know, as you said, we don't bite. And I thought it was a very good meeting, very constructive. And I think it should, you know, happen more often. As I said, I come from the Gaeltacht back in Dingle and west of Dingle, and we've seen our place decimated. And like I'm saying, we're worried about the future, and is there even a future? We're worried about the place going wild and everything else, and we, you know, Dingle replies a lot on tourism and people come around to see the scenery, and will there be anybody to see that in years to come? And I'm just wondering and worried, like, has the horse bolted, you know? But as I said, it was good here to come and see the minister today. And
I suppose it was everyone's first out in a long time given COVID.
Yeah,
relaxed atmosphere.
It was relaxed, yeah. But as I said, I think, look, farmers don't bite, and look, if you meet him and talk to him, you know, what we want is a bit of fairness.
Is there any one thing that you were putting to the minister tonight?
Well, I suppose it's all about the suckling scheme, and you know, and some of the schemes is there, like, you know, a lot of red tape. Also, like, about, you know, helping the smaller farmer and keeping smaller farmers. Like I said, during COVID there in Dingle, when every place was closed, like you said, the creamery, the vet, you know, the mattresses were going. They were the only places going. Again, it was the farmer that was keeping
the country going. Like they were open because farmers were there, and
they had to be
open. The other people that, I would say, urban people, if they wanted hardware, they were to go to the store.
But even the hardware was closed, like, at the very first lockdown. Yes. So basically, the only places that were open were the feed merchants, the market was going, all right, online, but at least the meat factories were going. And fairness, the dairy farmers, the sheep farmers, they contributed as well. But so did the suckler farmer. And like, go back to 2007, when the country collapsed, the farmer kept it going. When COVID hit, the farmer did his bit. But I think, you know, the farmer can't keep going at a loss every year, especially the small beef suckler farmer. We all contribute. Every single one of us.
You'd like to see that addressed?
Yes, because as I said, when the next pandemic hits, or the next earthquake hits this country, or the next thing collapses, like I said, we've seen Dell, how they left Limerick. What about if Facebook, Google, some of these pharmaceuticals live? We won't be looking to the farmer all the time, because he won't be there. And as I said, I'm talking about rural shops, post offices have gone, and you know, it's the farming is a vital part of it. We can't all live in the cities.
Hi there, my name is Nina O'Connor from North Kerry. I am a tillage farmer and an agricultural contractor also.
Nice. What did you make of this evening's event?
I thought it was a very good engagement. It gave us a direct communication with Minister McConnellogue and his officials. What he got was a vast view from, like Norma said there tonight, from people that are on the ground, the issues that are on the ground. Cap money, people with a low acreage with a high entitlement. Fella, we'll just give an example, a man with 50 acres of land having a payment of, we'll just say, 10,000. The new cap is going to eradicate that down to 6 or 7 to make him unviable. That was the first. A lot of the issues around cap tonight was discussed. The nitrates is a big issue. The worry of covering lagoons, covering open tanks.
And it was hard to keep it on track, as with so much topics like that going on. It was a bit of an achievement to keep things within the cap for most of this evening.
It was, but I thought it was ran very well, and it stayed on the cap for 90% of the meeting, which the meeting is about. And I think the minister carried a lot of good points away tonight in to bring fairness to the cap. That's what everyone wants here tonight, is fairness in the cap.
And speaking of that, I suppose you brought up the issue of forgotten farmers, and it was thrown back, would be the wrong way to say it, was put back. What would your suggestion be? And I think you put out a very fair response tonight. Could you tell us what it was?
The minister wanted suggestions on how we feel it would be fair, and I just made the point that on the last cap and the cap previous, we fell between two stools. What I wanted off the minister was, we'll say that he would give us a top up on the existing entitlements we have, and give us a top up on the next round of TAMS and the new cap, so that we get the 60% top up for farm investment, and we'd get the top up on our existing entitlements, like the older, we'll say the previous one farmers got in the last.
And you were saying that would run for a duration of
the 5-year period.
Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll chat to you all next week.